Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, happy holidays. Thanks for downloading this week's episode of Real Sports Talk Radio. Lots of news going on. We're going to dive into the Odell Beckham situation here from Tom Coughlin, head coach of the New York Giants. Also going to be talking with Bill Ingram, talking NBA. So much news going on. But first, let me tell you about our good friends over at TrueCar.com. That's right, TrueCar.com. Guys, car shopping can be difficult. It can be annoying. It can be crazy. But we can make life easier for you with your car shopping by going to TrueCar.com. And you can save up to $3,000 off the MSRP pricing. That's right, up to $3,000. How is that to get a $3,000 discount on getting into a new car? Go to TrueCar.com, pick the car out, and get guaranteed price savings immediately. That's TrueCar.com. Go there now, but for now, enjoy the show. Come on in, take a seat, enjoy, sit back, relax. Let's talk some sports. Thanks for downloading this week's episode of Real Sports Talk Radio. My name is Randy Zelia. I am the proud founder of BackSportsPage.com, the host of Real Sports Talk Radio, now going on for 4 years. And most of all, the guy who has to sit through all the crazy conversation everywhere he goes about the world of sports. That's right. Everybody thinks they know everything. So when they tell me, they think that they have all the answers. But thank you, and happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Ramadan. Happy Hanukkah, just in case I missed any particular holiday. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy Valentine's Day. It's a beautiful time of year. If you're in the Northeast, you must be wondering where all the cold weather is. Don't jinx it. I like this weather. If it was up to me, I'd be very happy with 65-degree weather all year round. That's just me. So where do we start this week? There's only one place to start, and that's with the New York Giants. I was over at the game this past week with Odell Beckham and Josh Norman. My God, it's a lot to do about something because everybody's talking about it. We're going to hear from Tom Coughlin's press conference today. We're going to play the whole thing because we're talking about Minnesota. But this has been my biggest problem with the media for a long time, is not letting things sort of lie. You know, when is enough to just keep a topic going? Yeah, it was bad. Like, I'm not going to tell you it wasn't bad. Odell should have been ejected. He should have been benched. He should have been something. Something should have happened, but it just didn't. So after everything that happened this past weekend with Odell Beckham, we're here from Tom Coughlin. He did lose his appeal today. So this press conference happened before the appeal was heard. So it was around that time. We've seen some crazy things with the Giants this season. Man, the tough losses, so many of them, so many close ones. You talk about the Dallas game, the Atlanta game, the New Orleans game, the Jets game, Patriot game. You're looking at least 5 wins. So out of those 8 losses, you put 5 of those back in the win column. You're 11-3 out of 14 games. So a big difference than 6-8. But obviously, better number. Yeah, definitely, definitely better number than 6-8. So that is a true fact, a well known fact. The Giants have done this to themselves this year. You can go over the stats of the game, but at the end of the day, the end of the whole situation finishes out with not being able to close that game. I do think Tom Coughlin has lost this team. I do think Tom Coughlin will be gone at the end of the year. I do think that this is a no-win situation. Even if they make the playoffs this year, they are done. So I think that you are now at a point where you have to enter the marriage. You have to look at everything on whether or not you bring, it starts with bringing Jerry Reese back. And then you have to decide whether after Jerry Reese comes back, whether Tom Coughlin comes back. And then after that, you have to decide what's going on with Eli Manning. I don't think Eli Manning is a problem. I don't think Odell Beckham. I do not think that Jason Pierre-Paul is the problem. I think the problem is, in the past, Ernie Accorsi built this team with depth. And this team has no depth on this team. This team has no depth. There is no next man up mentality. Because the offensive line over the last two seasons have been, or the last three seasons, has been a disaster. This year, they're bending, not breaking. In the last two seasons, they've broken before they haven't had a chance to bend. So now the team has to respond. And so now we see what's going to happen. I'm going to read you the statement from Odell Beckham Jr. About this situation. He did lose his appeal, so now he is not playing this weekend. He did say this earlier today, "I owe some people an apology. I wasn't ready to act like I did the other day. I'm not here to make excuses for my conduct. This isn't about anything that was said or done to me. This is about my behavior, and I'm responsible for my behavior. People expected better from me, and I expect better from myself. First of all, I apologize to the organization. I represent the Giants and our ownership, John Mara and his family, and Steve Tisch and his family. Jerry Reese, who drafted me and gave me the opportunity to be a part of this organization. I want to apologize to Giants fans. They want to be proud of us and players like me who represent their team. What happened the other day was embarrassing to them and embarrassing to me. A lot of kids look up to me as a role model. That is a responsibility I accept and take seriously. Many of the parents of those kids have asked since Sunday what they should say to their children about my conduct. I don't have the perfect answer, but I think one thing they can say is how I handled myself the other day was an example of how not to conduct yourself. I displayed poor sportsmanship, and those parents can also say that you act like that, there are consequences. And I hope to be an example of somebody who did something wrong and learned from it. I owe Coach Coughlin and our coaches and my teammates an apology. They have to answer for my action, and that's not fair to them. How I conduct myself is my responsibility. I let my coaches and teammates down. I am blessed to be privileged to be play the game I love and will do all I can to carry myself in a way that honors the game, the NFL, my team, my coaches, and all my fans and my family moving forward." So that was Odell Beckham a couple hours ago making the statement about the fact that he did not get his the appeal that he was looking for. That was a statement that he gave to the Giants a couple of hours ago. I'm also going to read the statement that was posted on his Twitter account. It's something similar, but also at the same time also a little different. It's a touchy situation. Some people are saying how come Josh Norman didn't get his share of the blame or the fault of what happened. He got fined, and he definitely has to. Here's what also he says. Odell Beckham also said, posted this on his Twitter account. "I appealed my suspension because it's the right granted to all players under the NFL's CBA and because I owe it to my teammates to do everything I can to be on the field this week. Regardless of the outcome of my appeal, I apologize for my actions on Sunday. I work hard to be great, and accepting the blessing of having the physical skills to play at this level brings responsibility to conduct myself in a certain way on and off the field. Sportsmanship and respecting the game are as important as blocking running routes and catching the football. I dropped the ball on sportsmanship on Sunday. I apologize to my teammates, the Giants organizations, and all the fans of the NFL. I totally agree with that. So, that's just a situation, and that's just the way it is. And, you can't. I'm not going to sit here. We're going to see if we can get Jose Padilla to join on in a few minutes to join me so he can get his opinion on this and to see how far from his perspective. I was there. He wasn't. So we'll definitely get a different perspective on how this was. I want Jose to hear Tom Coughlin talk about the situation and let Jose decide on whether Coughlin has lost the team or not. What I really wanted to play was the reaction from Sunday from Tom Coughlin. I didn't have the opportunity to get that pumped up and ready to go. I apologize for that. I will read it. I just think it's one of those situations where you realize that maybe he has lost the team. Whether you're a Giants fan or a Coughlin guy or a supporter, maybe Tom Coughlin has lost the team. Whether you really want to admit it or not, it's touchy because he is your coach. You know, here's the guy that got you 2 Super Bowl rings. Do you really want him to go? And I'm not sure how I feel about Tom Coughlin possibly being ousted as head coach. I'm not sure. Here's what Tom Coughlin had to say when brought up in the press conference. Like I said, I wish I had the audio set for you guys. I don't, so I apologize. Question was, at any point did you consider sitting him down and let him cool off for a little bit? Coughlin's response, you want me to take him out of the game? The reporter reiterated, rather than getting personal fouls, how many did he get? 3. Well, that just goes to show again how he lost his composure. If you're the head coach and you don't know how many personal fouls, you don't know how many your star player has, and then you're not, I don't know what the 3 to move on. I'm not 100% sure because that's just ridiculous. And I think that's really, really, really ridiculous for the fact that you don't know that information. That's terrible. I really, really, really wish that Coughlin did pull him, because at that point you really, 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 really need to look at everything as a whole and decide what you're going to do, not only about Odell Beckham, but your team as whole. Because I'm a firm believer is you don't have enough. You guys have to decide whether you really want to keep your guys in the, you know, as far as now you're out without Beckham. You have Nix, Randall, Dwayne Harris may not be ready to go. You know, it just may not be. You know, for Giants fans, too many close calls. There's way too many close calls this year. You have, and then we counted 5 games, 6 games. They gave that Eagles game away earlier this year. There's not a doubt in my mind they gave away that Eagle game. Let's bring in Jose Padilla. Jose, you know, you and I have talked about the Giants so many times, and I've gone the first 13 minutes, and I'm going to play a clip for you from Tom Coughlin's press conference earlier today. What was your first take on the Odell Beckham situation? And then your opinion on the appeal.
Well, I'm going to be like completely honest. Like, unfortunately, like most people, I kind of turned away from that game when it got a little out of hand. So I actually did not see any of the actual personal fouls that occurred. The only thing I saw was the first play that happened when Norman tossed into the ground, and then the subsequent touchdown that tied the game. I've obviously seen replays of it. Look, there's no – you can't defend what he did. You know, right. Obviously, he needs to be suspended. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. What my question about all this is why wasn't Norman at least wasn't there at least an attempt to suspend him for a game? At the end of the day, he's going to get fined. He's going to pay that. So, you know, whatever. We're more concerned about Beckham here at this point. So, you know, he deserves to get suspended. In all honesty, just as an aside, as a complete, just having to put it out there, I'm actually glad he's getting suspended because I'm facing a guy that has him in fantasy. So, honestly, I'm okay with that.
I will tell you, I did read the statement that he made through the Giants and also the statement that was on his Twitter account. And I think he understands now that he can't do that. I want you to hear Coughlin from earlier today, and then Jose, you let me know whether he's somebody who should want to bring back for next season. Here's Tom Coughlin earlier today during his press conference.
The only thing I'll say about the incident that occurred the other day in the game that everyone is preoccupied with right now is the fact that to depict this as Odell Beckham being wrong and the only one wrong is not right. It's not fair. It's not justice. It's not the way it was. If you're naive enough to think that way, then you better do some soul searching yourself. Beckham certainly was wrong, and we said he was wrong from day one. But there were factors involved, starting in pregame, which are well documented, which indicate that there was an attempt to provoke him. He was provoked. He was out of control. He was wrong. There's no doubt about it. You'd like that didn't happen. But the fact of the matter is, if you know that, the situation pregame with the baseball bat, and if you know what occurred at the very beginning of the game, you can understand that, you know, there was two sides to this and not just one. And that's the only thing I'll say about that incident. All right, we're on to the Minnesota Vikings, a very good football team that's 9-5. They're 3-3 in their last six games. They're one game behind Green Bay in the NFC North. They're +2 in the turnover ratio. They've only committed 81 penalties, which is second lowest in the National Football League. And I can tell you that they play a good brand of football and they do not beat themselves. Their offense is ranked 28th overall. They're fifth in the league in rushing, which is what they want to do. They run the ball. They throw the play-action pass. They're fifth in rushing, 31st in passing. Teddy Bridgewater, their young quarterback, is a 66% completion percentage. He has 13 touchdowns and a 90.4 quarterback rating. Versus Chicago, this guy was 17 for 20 with four touchdown passes and one running play. He did run the ball in for a touchdown as well. Adrian Peterson is their outstanding rusher who leads the league in rushing, leads the league in attempts with the rush. Kyle Rudolph, their tight end, their outstanding tight end, and rookie Stephon Diggs lead their team with 47 receptions apiece. Their defensive team is ranked 13th. They're 19th versus the run, 7th versus the pass. They're 4th in the NFL in preventing touchdowns in the red zone. Everson Griffin, their outstanding defensive end, leads their team with 8.5 sacks. Our friend Linville Joseph is there. He has had a toe injury. I would think that he will be ready to play against us. Chad Greenway, Terrence Newman, Harrison Smith, an outstanding array of defensive players as well. They have a very, very good special teams outfit with excellent production. They're 10th in punt return at 9.6 with Marcus Sherrills. They're second in kickoff returns at 28-2 with Patterson. They're second in punt coverage, allowing only at 5.0 per punt return. And they're 31st in allowing kickoff return yardage at 27.6. Any questions about the Minnesota game?
How much different are they using Joseph versus how maybe he was used here? And what kind of growth have you seen in him from your study?
Well, as I said, there's been three games in a row when he has not played. You know, Linville is a big, strong, physical defensive tackle. He plays on the nose. They feature a nose, a one technique, a three technique. He's on the center most of the time. And he's a big, strong, knock the center back kind of a guy who takes care of the interior of the line of scrimmage. And he is a good player.
Tom, your strong opening statement is that, are you more upset at the coverage of this or at the fact that the league has singled out Odell and not Josh Norman?
I'm done talking about it, thanks. I just made the one statement.
Did you say what you saw or heard during pregame that provoked this?
I saw what you saw. You got it. You got the footage. I'm not. Go ahead.
You talk about the preoccupation with this. I mean, is that a concern of yours inside the locker room with this team too?
The team is looking forward to the Minnesota game and preparing for them.
Have you had the chance to sit down with Odell yet? I know you said you would if you had an opportunity when you can.
I talked to him prior to.
Tom, were you aware?
What? Sorry.
Were you
prior to the suspension?
Were you aware of any of that pregame stuff while it happened? And if so, did you talk to Beckham and try to calm him down before that?
I didn't see the – I was standing on the sideline when the individual went by with a baseball bat, but I did not see the, you know, entering the ranks and that type of thing. But.
Did you say anything about a guy with a baseball bat on the field to anybody at that time?
That was – I'm done. I'm talking about Minnesota.
Is Odell here today, Tom? Did he get practice?
Is he allowed to practice?
The hearing is going.
All right, Jose. For those who don't know, Jose actually just messaged me saying, I think we can cut it off. I probably could have cut it down a little bit, but I wanted Jose and everybody else to hear Tom getting just frustrated and not acknowledging the fact this is a story. And people want to talk about it. And it's a hot button issue right now. Your reaction to Coughlin?
Well, as you know, I've never been a big fan of Coughlin myself. I want to hear something that you just said right now, like this is a hot button issue. I'm going to say that I don't necessarily agree with that. I think this is an issue because it's Beckham and it's the Giants and that's what's making it an issue. Obviously the game was also on TV later on tonight, but apparently there was a very similar play done in the Denver-Pittsburgh game, which a lot of people said might have been even worse than the Beckham play, except it was give or take 4 inches. So no one seems to be making too much of an uproar about that. So a lot of this, I think, to me, is because it involves Beckham in a nutshell. So I really feel like that's something that we kind of need to, like, maybe look into a little bit further. As far as Coughlin goes, I guess what you're trying to ask me, do I think Coughlin's lost the team in any aspect? I don't think he's actually lost the team. But I've been saying this to you personally and, you know, privately for a while now. I think it's time for a change. And I don't think it's anything to do with the fact that Coughlin's has lost the team. I actually think he's actually done a pretty good job coaching this team considering how bad the talent is. But I just think right now with this organization, they need a change. But it's not just Coughlin that needs to go. I think it's Jerry Reese that needs to go too because he's the architect of this ridiculous roster that Coughlin's had to coach for the last few years now. And, you know, if anything, if you're going to choose one or the other, I would rather choose Reese and get someone else in there that might be able to put more of a talent laden roster in there, but me personally though, I think it's just time to get rid of both.
So I agree with you 110%. I think that this weekend was the coming up of that this team needs a fresh start from the front office. I think that it's just the way it is at this point. It was hard. It's hard to comprehend on how far this team has fallen from a Super Bowl three years ago. It's baffling to me at this point. Jose, real quick question for you. Holiday predictions as far as what you're going to see underneath your tree is concerned.
Oh, man, I have no idea, dude. I'm actually needing some Cheerios.
awesome.
As you can tell, yeah, I was trying to. Brandon is wanting his Cheerios. So
that's the best Christmas gift ever.
Could not tell you actually. I have no idea. I'm not even venture a guess. What I would like, you all know what I would like, but I'm not even going to say it. So we'll just wait to see if it happens.
Yeah, well, with all that being said, my friend, I wanted to really quickly wish you a Merry Christmas, and we will definitely discuss everything over the next few days, but thanks for jumping on, because I know I wanted to get your opinion of Tom Coughlin. I don't know if you knew, but Bill Ingram is coming up next. We're going to be discussing the NBA a little bit, what's been going on. I do not want to spend a whole hour talking about Odell Beckham Jr.
I hear you, dude. Well, I'm glad I was able to swing on for a little bit, but I better get going because my little one is getting Cheerio crazy right now. But listen, happy holidays to you. I obviously will talk soon. You know, take care of our personal affairs. Believe someone owes me a movie.
Yes, I know. I got to go see Star Wars. I'm sort of looking forward to it, but I'm not looking forward to it. So we'll see how it goes. Our next guest is all about Star Wars. So, Jose, thanks very much, buddy. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Valentine's Day. Everything that's coming up, I wish you happiness.
And thank you, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. And that brings us to our next guest, NBA extraordinaire, Mr. Bill Ingram. Bill, how are you today, buddy?
You're saying your previous guest had not seen the new Star Wars movie? What on earth? I mean, what could possibly be going on that would prevent
that? Jose and I made a bet, and this was during the NBA Finals. I bet Cleveland was going to beat Golden State, and he bet Golden State was going to be Cleveland. If I would have won, he had to go see the Entourage movie. If I had lost, or if he won, I would have had to go see Star Wars. And he and I have yet to coordinate the times right to go do this. So it's on me. It's not on him.
There
it's
was
on,
an Entourage it's, movie? Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was in the theater for about a week.
I missed that one. Well, I have seen the new Star Wars movie 3 times, and without giving away any spoilers for anyone that may not have seen it, oh my God. Like, Hakeem Olajuwon used to be my God, now it's J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Anybody
yeah.
who can revive
I think you're not the only one who feels that way.
Legendary series. Like, I mean, he did it with Star Trek, now he's done it with Star Wars. What? I mean, this guy can do anything. If I'm making a movie, he's my director.
You know what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for Star Wars meets Star Trek. That's what I'm waiting for from J.J. Abrams.
Since the whole Marvel DC thing, Star Wars versus Star Trek, Kirk versus Luke. Yeah.
It's well. Speaking of you know, galaxies far, far away. Let's talk about the Golden State Warriors, ropes. No one is doubting how good they are, how good their start is. But I have to ask you, because, you know, I have my ear down to the league very well, but you have it better than I do. Do you feel the same way as I do that if they get to a 7-game series with a team like San Antonio or Cleveland, they can really struggle?
Well, I think so. The thing is, you know, as we saw last year, the NBA playoffs it's like the oven that a sword gets beaten in before it has a blade. It's something that takes teams and it forms them and shapes them and molds them into something that they will be when the finals approach, and to win a championship, you know, you're formed throughout the process. It's really a tough thing to go through for a young team. Now, if you're San Antonio or perhaps Cleveland with Kyrie and LeBron, they've kind of been through some things, you know, you're forged through what happens to you before the finals. The Spurs don't need forging. Maybe, you know, you add LaMarcus Aldridge, who's a young player who's been responsible for the bulk of what's going to happen with his team in Portland. And now, as you and I were talking about earlier in the week, you know, he doesn't have to play 45 minutes for his team to have a chance of winning, which with Portland he did. Now he might play 25 minutes, score 17 points, and his team wins by 20. And that's been an adjustment for him. So I think for a team like the Spurs, when you have David West, you know, the changes that they made during the offseason don't hurt them in terms of experience. But what you have with the Warriors is a young team that, you know, is still facing new challenges. The thing that gets me about Golden State is that every time they've faced a challenge, they've overcome it. The winning streak was incredible because they're the defending champs. There's one target on Steph Curry's back. He's a defending MVP. There's another target on Steph Curry's back. He's getting the absolute best effort. I mean, that duel he had with Kyle Lowry was just legendary kind of thing. Everybody's giving the Warriors their best game, and they're giving Steph Curry their best defense, and he's still dropping 40 on teams. And that long winning streak, and now still just one loss on the season, is incredibly impressive given the fact, you know, that's why it's so hard for teams to repeat as champions, because you have this incredible target on you, and you're getting, I mean, it's the freaking Milwaukee Bucks that beat them, and they're terrible. And it's because you go into that game thinking, it's just the Bucks, and whether you intentionally do it or not, you do let up, because it's not a great team that you're playing. It's human nature. You let up a little bit, and that team is going to play their best game of the season against you, and that's what we saw. It's a perfect storm. But overall, the Warriors have faced incredible tests and overcome them each time. So while I'm a San Antonio guy, I'm completely the Spurs in terms of the 17 years I covered the league. It's just unprecedented the kind of success that they've had with different stars rising and falling and retiring and, you know, new guys stepping in to fill the void. First David Robinson, then Tim Duncan rises, then he's on the decline. Now it's Kawhi Leonard. Then you've added Tony Parker, of course, was in the middle there, and you've added LaMarcus, who, an incredible player. I'm a Spurs guy, but will it surprise me if the Warriors face that test and find ways to overcome it? No, because they've had to overcome an awful lot this season.
Hey, it's funny, too, because Christmas is going to be very interesting, because I know that Kyrie, like, they wanted Kyrie back with a couple of games under his belt before Christmas, because they wanted him to be ready for the Warrior game. It's funny because, you and I also were texting earlier in the week about the Hornets and the Bucks, and if the playoffs started today, both of those teams would be out. That's yeah. I know we keep saying it because we're still in the first quarter of the season, but man, three of the eight playoff teams from the Eastern Conference that started today, I'm sorry, two of them. Three of them would be out. The Celtics, the Wizards, and the Bucks. Out of those three, which ones do you see climbing back into the top eight?
Celtics, certainly, and I think the Hornets, once you get Al Jefferson healthy and that unit is complete, it would be very hard for me to see those two teams missing the playoffs in the East. Now, the Bucks, on the other hand, a very good friend of mine was instrumental in helping build that team to the point where they were last year when they shocked everybody, won a bunch of games they weren't supposed to win, even with injuries, made the playoffs. And that's David Morway, who was the GM of the Indiana Pacers when they rebuilt that team from the Reggie Miller era to a contending team around Paul George and Hibbert and David West and that incredible group of guys. When he left, that all fell apart in Indiana. He took a job as John Hammond's assistant in Milwaukee. And then John Hammond retired, and new ownership really kind of installed the son of one of the owners is really now kind of the one calling the shots. And David had an opportunity to leave, and he did. And I asked him about that, and he said the reason he left is because the new direction of the team doesn't make any sense. He said he knew before the season started that they were going to be really bad. And I was like, really? Well, break that down for me, because I haven't watched a lot of Bucks games other than box scores. And he said, well, they jettisoned all their veterans in order to save money, such as Zaza Pachulia, but also Jared Dudley's gone. The guys who were kind of their veteran leaders are no longer there, and you replace them basically with a bunch of young guys who don't know how to win, and then there's no one there that really has assumed that role. You've got guys who are in contract years, like Giannis. You've got guys that are kind of worried about their own personal situations, and then you've got Greg Monroe, who was, I thought, and David agreed, brilliant acquisition. It was exactly what the Bucks needed. But Greg doesn't know how to lead either. He didn't do that in Detroit, and he's trying to figure it out. But you can't lead without someone showing you how. And then you look at a team like Dallas where Zaza Pachulia landed, and you go, yeah, Zaza Pachulia, really? That's your starting center? And yet look at how well they've played with him. And he's had some very good games, and it's because he's a veteran. He understands the way the league works. He gets it. And you have to have, for a young team, this is what we already see Brian Colangelo doing this in Philadelphia, as he has essentially replaced, though Sam hasn't been fired yet, Sam Hinkie, is he's talking to guys like Chuck Hayes and John Lucas III, guys who know the league, they understand the game on an instinctive level, and these are guys who can come in and teach the young kids what it means to win. And help them understand it's not just going out and playing basketball. There's a lot more to the game than that. And when you don't have those pieces, as Milwaukee no longer has them, it really puts you on an uphill climb, believe it or not, and thank God, finally, improving. And the Bucks have not found a way to fit into that picture with all the other teams that are improving in the East.
And then there's the Washington Wizards, where I guess maybe the loss of Paul Pierce, them not having a solid small forward, is finally sort of catching up to them right now, because they had Ariza, who, as you know, down in Houston, is a great locker room guy. And he brought so much to Washington at that point, and they replaced him with Paul Pierce, and then they lose Paul Pierce, and they really don't have that third, that three spot solidified. So, you know, I'm feeling there might be a coaching change there, because they did bring back a lot of the same guys, but it's just not working this year.
Yeah, I think the Paul Pierce move was interesting because it was a dare-to-be-great move. We're going to let Trevor Ariza go. Trevor Ariza, very much in his prime. Paul Pierce, of course, very much past his prime. And that's a problem the Clippers are having now, is they were really counting on Paul Pierce being something for them, and he's been very little. And they did not need veteran leadership. They have plenty of that, especially with Chris Paul. But, you know, the issue there in Washington is yes, you had a very, very, very good team when Trevor Ariza was there. They weren't as good when you let him go to Houston and you signed Paul Pierce. Though I understood, you know, it's easy in hindsight. Let's be clear. When they made that move, you thought, yeah, that makes sense. Paul Pierce could be the piece that puts him over the top. Unfortunately, it turned out to be the year that his game just fell off a cliff, and it's still the bottom of that chasm now with the Clippers. But, you know, that being said, the Wizards, there's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of the losing mentality has infected that team. I love Marcin Gortat because he'll tell you what he thinks no matter what. And he was quoted the other day. I was reading some quotes he said about how negative everything is and it's just terrible and nobody believes in the team anymore. And it shows on the court because, you know, for anybody who's ever played, much less watched, basketball is a very mental game. As much as baseball is a very mental game, you're where your head is at is where the game is at. And the Wizards look like a team that does not believe in themselves. They look horrible. And what's the answer? They have a very good front line. They have one of the best young point guards in the game, and Beal is one of the best young shooting guards in the game. But if you don't have a coach teaching that team what it means to have a winning mentality, they're going to have the kind of results they're having right now. And most nights, they just look like they don't even know what they're doing out there.
Yeah, can you imagine a guy like Thibodeau end up going to Washington? Oh, my God, that would be
Well, those guys could actually play 48 minutes a night and be fine. He needs a young leg.
Well, you know, and it's funny, too. If you look up and down the Eastern Conference, you have Cleveland, who is where we thought they'd be, number one. They have Toronto, who you and I both said are the champions of the regular season, but they're built for the regular season and not built for the playoffs whatsoever.
Yeah. No front court over the off season. Yep.
Yet again, you know, you and I said the same thing. Toronto needs front court help. Thank God they signed that backup small forward.
And they got Luis Scola. Yeah. His prime ended about 4 years ago.
Atlanta is not having the same success they had last year, obviously, because
DeMar Carroll was MVP, right? He was the real MVP.
I also just think that I think they just played above their head last year. The Indiana Pacers is sort of the same thing that I feel about Toronto. I love Monta Ellis playing next to Paul George, but they just have no front court.
Yeah.
And that gets you through the regular season, but it doesn't get
in
you well
into the playoffs. Yeah. It can in the East, yeah. In the West, they'd be toast. But, yes, in the East, those two are enough.
Uh-huh. Do you believe in the Miami Heat at this point?
Well, absolutely not, because most nights they don't look very good. And in a seven-game series, we're waiting for Dwayne Wade's next knee injury, which would be the end of any hopes they had of winning any games. You know, and Dwayne Wade is very much like Paul Pierce. He's way past his prime, although – he still can give you a few good games. Yeah, the fact is he just can't give you a good series. And Chris Bosh can't be the guy. He'll give you a good game, but he won't give you a good series. And so who then? Is it Hassan Whiteside? You know, the Dwight Howard rumors crack me up. Really? I just don't think that's coming from Pat Riley. I mean, call me crazy. I just don't think Pat Riley is Dwight Howard when they're figuring out what they could add to fix their team. You know, I just think Miami is they're a decent regular team, not a good regular season team, but when the playoffs start, they're toast.
I guess the wild card team so far in the Eastern Conference in the first half of the season has been the Detroit Pistons. They played well. I love Van Gundy as the coach because he has the experience. I just think they'll think that they're maybe a year or two away.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, you have to love what Andre Drummond has done. I completely agree about Stan Van Gundy. He can coach my team any day. I think you can say the Pistons are 2 years away. I think if you say LeBron is 2 years older and, you know, the rest of the East, when you look 2 years down the line, Andre Drummond's only going to continue to get better. They've got some young players that are growing and evolving, and that's what you want. When you have lost as long as Detroit lost after the Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, you know, they went through years and years of just horrible stretches, which is, you know, that's what you do when you're rebuilding. And now they've landed some of those pieces that look like, hey, these could be the pieces with one or two more. It's a tweak. They're a tweak away from being an extremely good team, whereas a lot of teams are four or five pieces away. So, yeah. I could see Detroit, and they've looked very, very good in stretches, and then they struggle at times. And I think it's the same kind of thing with they've got the right coach. They've got most of the right pieces. They need another piece or two, and then they might be a team that's ready to get back into the championship discussion, especially when LeBron is a couple of years older and Cleveland maybe has got a couple more, at least finals trips, if not championships, under their belt. I definitely see Detroit being the next team in line, especially with Chicago's drop-off. Their window is quickly closing, and with the absence of a front court in Indiana.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, too. Chicago just seems to me like they're the team that has they're turning what I like to call into the Cavs of the 90s, the Nets of the 2000s, where they're going to be there. They're in the playoff picture.
Hawks of the 80s.
The Hawks of the 80s, they're going to be in the playoffs, and they could make some noise or they could be knocked out, but that's what the Bulls are. The Bulls are just there. Coaching change, injuries, Rose wants out of Chicago. It's obvious, and Noah can't stay healthy even if he tried at this point. So is it safe to say that the Bulls are on the downward spiral at this point?
It's unfortunate because in the process, you've got Jimmy Butler evolving into one of the great he's the best shooting guard in the East, giving James Harden and Klay Thompson a run for their money in terms of who's the best shooting guard in the league as a whole. And when Derrick Rose plays well, that team is incredibly good. The problem is Derrick Rose, as you mentioned, the injury situation, he's a shadow of his former self. And so he has one brilliant game for every five games, and then he'll have two really just terrible games in five, and then he'll have two where he looks pretty good. If he was playing pre-injury, before all the knee stuff went on, MVP Derrick Rose, the Bulls are as good as Cleveland. But unfortunately, that's not who Derrick Rose is anymore, and he can want out, and that's fine, but nowhere the issue with Derrick Rose is he's just not the player he was, and he won't be that player anywhere else. So, you know, if he was, there's no conversation. Everybody's happy. They're an elite team. I didn't get the coaching change. The thing with Tom Thibodeau, the knock on him was always the minutes. He's playing people high minutes. Well, give him a better, deeper roster then. Because the reason he's playing the guys heavy minutes that he's playing heavy minutes is because he doesn't have, when you take your top six guys off the court, the Bulls aren't very good. And so this year we're seeing Hoiberg play them fewer minutes. And they're just not very good when the top six guys are not on the floor. They're not very good. And you're absolutely right. Joakim Noah's not been the player, and Derrick Rose has not been the player. And that's been the challenge for Chicago, is simply, you know, on paper they look one way, but on the court they look a different way.
And when Thibodeau was there, the best job to have was that backup point guard spot. Because, yeah, you had Heinrich on the floor, but whether it was Aaron Brooks or DJ Augustine, you got minutes and you have to show what you can do, because they were so used to that 1-4 offense that Rose played. And so they were running the same offense with their backup. So Brooks was able to average like 18 a game. Nate Robinson was able to succeed in that spot. And same thing with DJ Augustine. So,
yeah.
The
thing that kills me, coaches get blamed for things and coaches get fired. And what the heck is Billy Donovan doing? As much as Fred Hoiberg, you know, the Bulls were better with Thibodeau. Nobody's surprised about that. And then you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, and it's like, really? What is Billy Donovan doing better or even differently than Scott Brooks? When you make a coaching change, there should be something different that happens on the court in a positive way. That coach should have a vision for what the team was doing that they're not, what they weren't doing that they could be doing, and that's what he's going to do with the team and teach them something different. And instead, in two situations with two elite teams or would-be elite teams, we've seen a coach fired and a new coach hired, and neither of those teams is doing as well as they did under their former coaches who are still collecting paychecks.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing, too, Oklahoma City credit, their management credit, because they saw, even with Durant out last year, they looked at the other guys they had around Westbrook, and they said, the same crew that we've had here for years is not working. So they went out and made some other moves, and now with Durant back and Westbrook back, they have better supporting cast for those two, but I think those two have taken that franchise as far as they can take it. Because they haven't made the finals since the year with Harden. And then after Harden left, it was, you know, they haven't been able to really bounce back to do anything. So,
well, and,
you know,
and the big problem they have, the Thunder lose every game against a team that has a decent starting shooting guard.
Yeah.
Not only do they not have offense at the two, they also don't have defense at the two. And teams have figured that out. And you go look at their losses, and all but one, as I recall, of their losses have been to teams with an elite shooting guard, and they just run the offense through the two.
Well, that's the crazy part. And now here's the question that we went over the top eight in the Eastern Conference, and we also talked about Milwaukee, Washington. Obviously, Charlotte needs to get Al back. Glenn Stevens is doing an excellent job in Boston. You and I, the Sixers, the Nets, and the Knicks. I still don't see the Knicks making it in this year. I still see everything being a disaster. Your opinion, Carmelo Anthony and Nick by the end of the season, or is he moving on?
Oh, I think he's still there. You've got wife pressure, and that's significant. That's how he landed there in the first place. And you can legitimately say that the Knicks are one big piece closer with Porzingis than they were before. And I think Aflalo was a great addition there. As long as Carmelo understands, he had to know when he went there that it was a rebuilding process. He wasn't the missing piece in New York. He was going to be the first piece of a brand new Knicks team that had not been built yet. And so as we see, they're taking the Cavaliers down to the wire tonight, because Porzingis has 23 points, 12 rebounds, and counting. And it's 84-88 as we're watching the game right here. But, you know, the Knicks are a very, very, very significant piece closer to being good. They're still a very, very significant piece away from being good. But is this the point where Carmelo bails and goes to, what, the Lakers, and you start over from ground zero? The Lakers have nothing. If I'm Carmelo and you've already made this decision, you're here, you knew you were going to be awful for a while, why would you leave now when they're perhaps one key piece away from being decent?
Yeah, no, you're 100% correct on that. Yeah, that's true.
Because starting over is, I mean, I don't care. Jose Calderon is a serviceable point guard, above average. And then Porzingis, like I said, he's putting up incredible numbers. You know, one of the best young players in this year's class. They've got some decent pieces running. And by the way, tonight they're playing without Carmelo. So you're challenging Cleveland on the strength of Porzingis' game. But, you know, I just think when you're going into a situation where you know you're going to lose, and then a year or two later you're decent, maybe a year or two after that you're good. And that's where, honestly, as much as the Knicks have been the whipping boys and, you know, they're under 500 barely and all that, I think they're close enough. They're closer than any of the teams where Carmelo might go. If Carmelo leaves and goes somewhere else, you're pretty much starting over at ground zero. If you're looking for a max contract, the teams that can afford to sign you for a max deal are starting over. Why would you do that again? That would not make any sense to me.
Biggest disappointment in the Western Conference so far?
Easy to say Houston. That's the easy pick because they were in the Western Conference Finals last year. And and now they're, you know, struggling, fired their coach already, although not that he did any coaching. To me, that was kind of like, oh, really? Finally? Okay. And, you know, Dwight has been anything but what he was billed to be. Not that, again, you can go back and look at my writing for Basketball Insiders and see what I thought at the time. People like to rewrite history. From the very beginning, I said this is not going to work. Because Dwight, you know, people that I've known, friends of mine that are big Rockets fans, they say, man, it's like when we had Akeem. And my instant response to that, and you and I have talked about this, either you haven't watched Akeem play or you haven't watched Dwight play. Because the only similarity between Dwight Howard and Akeem Olajuwon is that they're both about 7 feet tall.
That's, and they both
the
played for the Rockets.
Similarity. but the biggest disappointment, honestly, and injuries have played a factor, but the New Orleans Pelicans, if they were 19-8, I wouldn't be surprised, but they're 8-19. And, you know, again, injuries have played a significant role. Alvin Gentry was a great hire for them. I really like Alvin as a coach. But they just continue, the injuries continue to mount, and they continue to have issues. That team on paper is a very, very good team, even in the Western Conference. And they just haven't been able to get it together. You know, and again, injuries play a role. But with Anthony Davis having the kind of season he's having, they should be a lot better than 8-19.
Yeah, 3-13 on the road. I don't understand the Minnesota Timberwolves. 4-10 at home and 7-7 on the road. That makes sense. Like, you're a young team. You're supposed to play better at home. So I don't get that at all.
Yeah, the Timberwolves, I don't know. That's a team that is, there's no identity there. I like the idea of Kevin Garnett simply because he's that, what we talked about earlier, he's that veteran that's going to, even whether he plays any minutes or not, or whether he plays well or not, that's beside the point. He's the veteran that has championship experience and all the things that he has, and he can help the young players. But and Andre Miller the same way, and Tayshaun Prince, you've got some guys there that are, you know, they have the veterans that they need in terms of leadership. And Andrew Wiggins is having a decent year. You know, he's putting up over 20 points a game, and Karl Anthony Towns has gone to town since we're, you know. But there's still, I think one of the issues that really just bugged me about Minnesota is that Ricky Rubio is not going to be the guy. There was so much hype about him coming out of Spain, and was he going to come, and all that stuff. And then they made him their franchise player instead of Kevin Love. And I just thought, wow, really? You see something in this kid that I have not seen. And we still haven't seen it. Ricky Rubio is a decent backup point guard, but they're treating him like a star. You know, he's something else. And I think one of the next things the Timberwolves are going to have to do is just really get a good grip on the fact and accept this and move forward understanding that Ricky Rubio is not your starting point guard if you're going to be a playoff team. Once they grasp that and really understand it and start building in a direction that reflects that understanding, they might have a chance to be good. But there's some good pieces. There again, you have Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. And Kevin Martin is still a decent shooting guard, though he doesn't have a lot of dimension. He's certainly not a good defender. But
you have
some pieces that are good. And in Wiggins and Towns, I think you have long-term pieces. But the rest of the team, I'm still waiting for somebody else to step up and really show that they're going to establish an identity with this team. And so far, that just has not happened for them.
All right, last question from each conference. How long until Scott Skiles wears out his welcome in Orlando?
The thing about Skiles, this kills me. Scott Skiles, I'm sure he has a very good basketball mind. He keeps getting jobs. But he's about as abrasive as anybody can be. And it's one thing to be abrasive in a way that your players understand and get, like Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich, he's abrasive as hell. But his players understand him. And when they do what he says, the team wins. And when the front office does what he says, the team gets better and improves and stays elite. The difference between Pop and Skiles is that Skiles is abrasive, and what he's saying, his players don't buy in. And so that's why he wears out his welcome after a couple of years because people, the players just get tired of hearing him being abrasive.
Yeah.
So you're not getting the results. You can be an a-hole. I liken it to Bull Durham where you've got mold growing on your shower shoes. Okay, well, when you're in the show and you got mold growing on your shower shoes, the press just thinks you're colorful. But when you're in the Bush League, it just means you're a slob. And so there's one thing to be the way that you want to be and be incredibly good at it. And then there's one thing to be the way you want to be, and it just rubs people wrong, and pretty soon you're gone. And so for a young team that is lacking an identity, Scott Skiles would not be my choice. And it's not working out in Orlando. Oh, they're showing signs. But I think when the Magic take the step, the next step they need to take, it will be with a different head coach.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And the last one, the Memphis Grizzlies just seem like they're very flat. I think maybe this might be the time to say that they've gone as far as they can far with the unit they have right now. Your thoughts on them?
Well, I think, you know, Memphis is I think you're exactly right. They had all those guys in their primes and they were very, very good. But there's always a team that is very, very good and can't quite get to the finals and can't quite, because there are other teams that are just better. And the Memphis Grizzlies have fallen victim to a period of time when the San Antonio Spurs and the Dallas Mavericks were just that much better than them. Just happened to, you know, a shot here, a shot there, a tweak here, a tweak there. And those teams were better. And now with Zach on the decline, and sure, Marc Gasol is still very much in his prime and getting paid as he should for being in his prime. But a lot of the players around him are no longer in their primes. And I think you're banking on that front court. You think Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, and it's not what you think it is. And I think when I watch the league every night, I think, oh, man, Memphis is going to kill so-and-so. Then you watch Marc Gasol or you watch Zach Randolph running in concrete shoes and you go, oh, yeah, Zach isn't quite the player that we're. When I think Zach Randolph, I still think Zach in his prime. He's not that anymore. And without him in his prime, the Grizzlies aren't the team you think they are. They got a great, you know, one of the top, maybe the best starting center in the game in Marc Gasol. And Mike Conley is one of the most underrated point guards. He's still very, very good. And they've got some decent pieces. Jeff Green, Vince Carter, you know, decent pieces. Tony Allen is a defensive specialist. But they're still just not quite as good as a lot of other teams in the West that have improved. While they've kind of stood pat with their guys, with their core group, which to their credit, that's how San Antonio does it. But I think the decline of Zach Randolph is the thing that's really killing them, and the fact that Tony Allen can't score the ball, you know, it kind of is accentuated when you see Zach play the way he does. So I hate to see it. The Memphis Grizzlies are great, and it's a very feel-good team. There's a lot of really good guys on that team, and you want to see them be successful. But there are, you know, when you look at what the elite teams in the West are doing, the Grizzlies can no longer hold their own with those teams.
Bill, let everybody know where they can find you. And, you know, yeah, let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter and websites.
Best thing to find me is at The Rocket Guy on Twitter. I'm kind of doing some freelance stuff here and there. I'm writing for True Love Sports and, of course, Back in the Game, 247.com. But more than anything, I'm enjoying my 4-year-old is desperate for me to give her some attention as we get close to Christmas, you know. But just check me out on Twitter, at The Rocket Guy. And anytime I write anything for anybody or do radio shows or whatever, I will certainly tweet those out so you can find me there.
Bill, Merry Christmas. Wish the best to the family. And, yes, there's an awesome picture of you guys doing the Star Wars thing. So, Bill, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Yep.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays, buddy.
Merry Christmas. We'll catch you on the flip side.
You got it. All right. That's my buddy, Bill Ingram. Guys, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. That's the end of this week's show. Thanks for tuning in. We went the full hour because we just had so much to talk about. I love talking NBA with Bill. We pretty much broke down the whole league. The whole league. So thanks very much for everything, guys. Have a great Christmas. Next week's the year review. Check it out, Real Sports Talk Radio. See you next week.